Hello friends, you're listening to Convos with me, Kathy Clark. Gary and I are the lead pastors at Hillsong Church in the UK, and I'm so happy to have you join us in the conversation today. This program is for you, and really, all we're doing is having a good, honest talk about real life issues that we all face. So whether you're on your daily commute, you're in the car, or you're at home with a coffee, sit back and I hope you enjoy today's chat. And by the way, don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Use the hashtag ConvosWithKathy. Hi there, and thanks again for joining us and our conversation today. I'm here in the studio today with Sarah Smith, who you may have seen because she's part of the dance and performing arts team. And she's married to Sean Smith, and he's also part of the dance team. He's a professional dancer. And so they're a great part of the church. But really what I wanted to talk to Sarah about today was not her dancing skills, but really what she does as a full-time job, which is quite interesting. It sounds quite interesting. Sarah's a youth support coordinator in a specialised teenage cancer unit. We're going to chat about her experience walking alongside patients and families who are facing terminal illness and what it's like to be a believer in that work environment and how all of us can sometimes face a tension between processing what our circumstances might say and yet believing God for that miracle. And then on a lighter note, I'm going to ask her if it's really true that she strongly resisted multiple invitations to come to our colour conference. Now, we're going to get to that later. Yeah. But right now, welcome, Sarah. I'm glad to have you with us.
Thanks very much.
Oh, and I love your accent.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. No, I just can't do it. Where are you from?
I'm from a wee town in the middle of nowhere, really, in Scotland. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, everybody loves the Scottish accent. I think everyone does. But what on earth brought you when you left Scotland and you came to England? To be honest, I get the feeling that, now I'm obviously not English or Scottish, but I get the feeling that Scottish people don't really like English people.
That's not true. We love the English. No, I think that's just like an old-fashioned thing. But it was just adventure, really, and trying to escape the rain. Like, it rains all the time.
Oh, I love that. You came to London to escape
the
rain.
Right? Should have gone to Australia. But yeah, it was just adventure. I was like really young. I was like 16, 17. I actually moved to Bristol originally and then ended up in London.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now I've got one of my favourite questions of all time that I love to ask people is how did you find church? And I'm talking about Hillsong Church.
Okay. So I had a friend from Scotland, Jason Strathdee, who I grew up with, and I went back one Christmas and he was like, oh, my church is in London, why don't you come visit? I was like, no chance. No, I'm not coming. Yeah, and I remember I'd been out on the Saturday night a long time because obviously it was the morning and I was standing at the bus stop on Taunton Court Road, probably still drunk. And I was like, oh, no way, that's that church that Jason kept rabbiting on about. Yeah. So I turned up. I thought, it's massive, there's no chance I'll see him. But I didn't realise he worked for church and he was like stood right at the front. And then he introduced me to a couple, because he knew I loved dancing, so he introduced me to a few dancers and then they just wouldn't leave me alone, basically.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So you didn't get saved straight away. You didn't kind of walk straight in and go, oh, my gosh, and boom, your hand goes up. That's not your story?
No. It took me a long time, actually, because, like, I'd always, like, believed in God and had a bit of a journey when I was younger, up until, like, my 20s. But then I was like, nah, it's not for me. So it took me, like, I'd say a few years, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of really patient people in Hillsong with me.
I was just going to say, a few years, actually, in Hillsong?
Yeah, well, like, as in, I wasn't going every week, but I would turn up whenever I felt like it and, like, go to, like, every dance team party they had because I loved the people, but I wasn't necessarily sold on church and God.
Okay. So obviously, eventually, you got to a point where you just realised that this is real.
Yeah.
Church is real. God is real.
Yeah.
I've got to make that step.
Yeah.
Where did you meet your husband?
On dance team. Mm. Actually, we got baptised together.
Wow.
And I met him that weekend when we got baptised. And we're friends for a little bit.
Were there any little sparkles or any little like heartbeat kind of skipping a beat at all when you first met him?
No, he was just, him and his friends were a bit annoying, to be honest.
Sean.
No, I'm joking. No, we were just good friends, like hanging out. And yeah. I guess
Okay.
Get to know somebody.
Okay, well, there's another good reason why you come to church.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, the main reason is obviously salvation and you and the salvation of the planet and how we can change the world and da-da-da. But that's another good reason.
Yes.
Is that a lot of people actually do come to church.
And meet somebody, yeah.
And find their partner in life and get married and go on from there.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. All right, then. So now let's just move on, because really what I wanted to know is, You're not a professional dancer. You don't dance full time. You have another job outside of that. And I'm just going to read it out again. I've already said it once, but I just want to read it again. And it just says, you're a youth support coordinator in a specialised teenage cancer unit.
Yeah.
So honestly, I would read that and I may have an idea what it's about, but...
It's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
What is it?
So basically my job is to... support the young people when they come in and they're from the point of diagnosis of cancer to the point of either they get better or, unfortunately, a lot of them die. Mm. So, yeah, so that can be like, it's a strange job. It can be like a wide range of things. So depends on the person, really, and what they need and what support they already have. Mm-hmm. It could be I run like support groups for them. When I say support groups, they're always like undercover support groups, because teenagers don't really want to go to a support group, but they do want to talk about what they're going through. So I might order Domino's and everybody come down and we just hang out and like...
Where would you hang out?
So we're really lucky in that Teenage Cancer Trust is a charity and they fund, like, it doesn't look like a ward. Like, we have a pool table, we've got, like, PlayStation, we've got a jukebox, we've got, like, it's all kitted out, especially for teenagers. Wow. So we've got, like, a really nice hangout area. So, yes, we run, like, groups there. We might do, like, baking one day. We do whatever they're into, really. Mm-hmm. We do different things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we do, like, loads of fun stuff, a bit of normality for them. A lot of them are stuck there for, like, months on end, really. So it's about, like, creating just nice things for them to do.
Would a lot of these kids have family support?
So some of them do, but it might surprise you how many don't. That's kind of what shocked me as well. I guess I would just presume that their families would be there for them. Mm. But everybody comes from different backgrounds and has different things going on. So, yeah, some of them don't have family around. So then you would step in and do a bit more. Yeah, can be difficult.
It would be, it's a tough job.
Yeah.
That's my reaction anyway. You must have times when you just get pretty low.
Yeah.
How do you kind of recharge yourself and refuel yourself to keep going and to stay focused and motivated and enthusiastic about life?
I think it depends, like, because your day, I love my job. So, like, I actually get a lot from it. Like, a lot of people say that because, like, you might be running a pizza group one minute and then the next minute you're helping a teenager plan their funeral, because no parent wants to help with that, but the teenagers want that. Mm. They want that bit of control. So you're doing like one extreme, or you might be doing like helping them do a memory book to leave behind for their loved ones, mm-hmm. or a memory box, you know. So it can be really tough things that you're doing with them, which like some people are like, how on earth can you do that? But I don't know. It sounds really weird, but I quite like it in that I do find it hard. I'm not saying I don't find it hard. I'm just like, you just feel like you're making such a difference in that moment that it's so worth it, and there's nowhere else I'd kind of rather be.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look after yourself as well, because if you're doing it for years
on end.
Yeah,
so what sort of things would you do to look after yourself?
So practical things that I do would be, I don't know, I put like, it sounds a bit strict, but I put like boundaries in place. Like, I don't take my work phone home with me.
Okay, yeah, that sounds very wise.
But
yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear what's going on when I'm not at work. Because you already think about them. Like, if you leave them, like, it can be quite consuming. Because you do, like, you might have known them for years. Like, you build really good relationships with them. It's all about kind of being that professional friend for them. So it is hard to switch off anyway. So if you've got people texting you all the time and things like that. So yes, I have that rule. I also have the rule that I don't want the nurses phoning me if anybody dies. I want them to tell me when I get to work.
Right.
I have like professional supervision with somebody that I do. I have that maybe once every couple of months.
What do you mean by professional supervision?
It's like somebody, because you don't really like, I don't know. It's one of those things like you don't really want to talk to the people around you about stuff that might go on. Like say, for example, you're catching up with a friend.
Yeah.
It's not something, it's a big downer, isn't it? If you're like every time you meet up for coffee, oh yeah, this. It's just like depressing. Yeah. And it's not wise to talk to everybody about it either, because you have to choose wisely, like who you share what with and what's appropriate and things. So I think putting something professionally in with somebody who's there specifically to talk about maybe a difficult case or something you're struggling with at work, I think that's wise. And then I also just think it's really important to plan fun things, like fun things with your friends, like you know, things that you've got to look forward to, like go for a coffee with a friend, or I love wine, I'll have a nice glass of wine.
We have some apples. We don't have any wine.
Or a whiskey, you know, proper Scottish.
Yes.
But yeah, like just putting in nice things, like or a good workout, you know, a good sweat makes you feel better, doesn't it? Something for you as well. Like that sounds a wee bit selfish, but I think if you want to last long in the job, you have to be careful.
Yeah. No, I would not consider that as being selfish at all, that you would put aside time for yourself to have a little bit of fun, and whether it's with the girlfriends or what do you and Sean like to do for some fun?
For fun? We do sometimes go like dancing, which is so stereotypical.
You do.
But we go like salsa dancing or something completely different, or like just going out for some nice food. Like it's a bit simple, isn't it? But
nice food. When you're, I'm just imagining when you said you go out salsa dancing, I'm imagining the couple that are the two dancers that are married and you go to weddings. You two would really annoy me. I wouldn't want to get up there and dance.
We're just really silly because nobody wants to dance serious when, well, he dances serious all the time, so he's actually just an idiot on the dance floor. So it's quite fun.
He's an idiot on the dance floor. Okay, so Sarah, in your workplace, then you're a Christian.
Yeah.
How do you go about with the colleagues that you're working with, your co-workers, how do you go with talking to them about your faith, or do they respond to you if they see you praying or?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you work that out?
I think it's like, I always love that saying from, I think it's St. Francis of Assisi when he says, go out into all the world and preach the good news and if necessary, use words.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our actions speak so much louder. I think in this day and age, we're so used to everybody preaching at us what they believe and what they think we should be doing and everything like that. I think you should just go out and live it, and then people will naturally, the conversations naturally come up. Like you don't need to force anything. And I actually had a colleague of mine who, the man who does my supervision. So I'd been having supervision with him for about 6 months, I think. And it never come up in conversation that I was a Christian at this point. Anyway, I had a young person that I was struggling with. It was like a situation I wanted to bring up who was a Christian. And he said, oh, so what did you do? What did you advise him? And I said, my advice to him was go find a church, because he was moving countries and he was going to be on his own and he was probably going to die over there. So I said, you need to find a church, like, because you need to have community around you and those people, they'll help you there. And he went, oh, why do you go to church? And I went, yeah, it's like my favourite day of the week. And he was like, he started crying, a grown man started crying, and he was like, I knew it this whole time that you were a Christian. He went, I have people preaching at me all the time. And he went, but you, like, there's just something about you. He was like, I want it, I want that. And I was like, for goodness sake, stop crying. I was like, you can have it too, like anybody can have it. Like, I don't know what, like, that was obviously God like working through me, but I didn't have to say anything. Like, it's just through the way that you act, the way you treat people, and it's in the little things. It's not in the big things at all. And God will shine through you. Like, you don't need to be preaching at anybody. It's not all on you to say the right thing. Or, like, I think sometimes we put pressure on ourselves. And actually, if we just like live in how God wants us to live, then people will see it shining through and then they want it. Like, that's how I became a Christian. It wasn't through a preach or anything like that. It was through dance team people not leaving me alone and seeing how they lived. And I was like, I actually want that for myself. Yeah. I think that speaks so much more volumes than anything else.
In a secular environment, work environment, then that's obviously going to speak very volumes.
Yeah, exactly, because you're not going to be the one gossiping or you're not going to be the one, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just little things.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking to myself now, how do you equate your faith with working with these kids all the time? Are you allowed to be open with your faith? Are you allowed to share anything or pray with them or, you know, what does that look like?
I mean, I think I'm very, like, lucky, or that's the wrong word, or honoured, like, in that I do a lot of one-on-one work. I'm not a nurse, I'm not a doctor, I'm not in there, like, to give meds and then go out or whatever. I actually get to build relationships with them, get to build rapport over a long time and spend one-on-one time with them. So we get to know each other really well. Mm. So I do actually get to like share what I believe. And actually when everyone's faced with death, I'd say everybody questions God, no matter what you believe before. Mm-hmm. It always comes up in conversation naturally. So like it's not something I have to be like, oh my gosh, this is what I believe, and like, you know, preach at them or anything. It just, it naturally happens. Mm. And so I get to naturally say, this is what I think. So yeah, I'm really like, I do get to do that.
Have you had any of those that your kids that you're working with that respond to that?
Yeah.
To that, yeah. Your faith?
Yeah. You know, I've worked with people of all different faiths, Christians, Muslim, all over the bracket. And yeah, I've seen God move with everybody. Mm. Not every single person, I don't mean that, but every belief, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had like one girl, she was like Muslim girl. And it's just amazing like what God can do in those situations. Mm. Like he doesn't need us at all. But she, I was there when she found out that she had like relapsed, so there was nothing else the doctors could do. And it was one of those moments that's like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but like, you know, that fear, just that horrific fear that comes over somebody when they realise that. And yeah, there's nothing that you can say or do or anything. And the nurse actually left the room because she thought she was going to burst out crying as well. The girl was like hysterical, and so like I work there every day, but I'm not an expert. Like, I don't, you know, you wing it every day to a certain extent because everybody's different and their reactions are different. So I was like, oh my gosh, I don't really know what to do. I was like, can I pray for you? So you know, and even the nurse said afterwards when she came back in, she was like, I can't believe like the peace that was in the room afterwards. And, like, you can only put that down to God, like, and actually, like, it was probably, like, a month later or something, she was really struggling with being able to, because she still had about 6 months after that, but she was struggling to live, because, like, thoughts and stuff were just bringing her down so much. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I was like, oh, well, you have to read this book. I was like, it's all about Jesus, but you have to read it, because it's that Joyce Meyer, what is it, Battlefield of the Mind?
Yes.
So I made her read that, and I bought her like 3 books or something. Anyway, she came back and I was like, what's your favourite bit? Mm. And she just like started crying. She said like my favourite bit was the bit when it said Jesus loved me.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
And she said that she was like, I swear Jesus came into the room, Sarah, and like totally. Oh,
Sarah.
I know. And yeah, so, like, I believe she met Jesus before she died, like, I really do. Mm-hmm. And I just think, you know, God can do anything with anybody, no matter what they believe. And
yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, God. that's mind-blowing, though, isn't it? Just think, she read quite a few books, but she reads The Battlefield of the Mind by Joyce Meyer, which is a very good book for anyone to read.
Yeah, exactly.
But out of all of that book,
that was the one thing.
That little bit that she got out of it was that Jesus loves me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it changed her life.
Yeah.
We just can't underestimate God and how he can intervene and what he can do in people's lives, can we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That was amazing. So I just wanted to ask you one other thing. That I have heard that sometimes Christian families can be a little bit more difficult to work with when it comes to facing death,
yeah,
especially with their children, because they're full of faith.
Yeah,
they're believing that, you know, God is going to heal. Do you come across that at all?
Yeah, I come across that quite a lot, actually.
Yeah,
and I don't have any answers. I don't. It's something that I personally struggle with too, almost, because you're living it with them, and like I really do believe that God can do miracles, like, and I do believe that God is a healer, and I believe he can. So it's like walking with them in that belief, but then at the same time, like, supporting them through whatever they're going through. And sometimes, well, I've personally never seen anybody get healed from cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe one day I will. And I'm like, just because I've not seen it doesn't mean I'm not going to, like, still hope for that miracle and still pray with them for that miracle, because it might happen one day. But I think we just need to keep our eyes fixed on eternity, really, because I think if we're here for like 15 years or 75 years, I think once we get to eternity, it's going to be like a blip, like in the face of that. So I think if we keep our eyes on that, I just think at the end of the day, Jesus has won the main battle. So if we just keep pointing people towards God and just, I don't know, help them when they're going through that fear and that anger and that maybe disappointment, and I don't know, just keeping the patient focused on God, like, then I just think that's the main thing, really. Like, we're called to be in relationship with God, so if we can encourage somebody in that for as long as they live, then...
Definitely. Not that I've been close to anyone that has died, but, you know, obviously being in church, you come across that a lot. And I would say for me, and I've not had nearly the experience that you've had in close proximity, but for me, I would have just said, you just need to hold on, because whether your healing is right here and now in Earth, on this planet here where we are, or whether your healing is that moment when you enter into eternity, you are going to be healed.
Yeah.
You are going to be set free from whatever it is. So whatever, you just don't let go, because, and you don't take your eyes off God, as you said.
Yeah.
You keep your eyes focused on him and you keep living for him. And, you know, I believe absolutely that you will be healed.
Yeah.
Absolutely, without a shadow of doubt. Where and how that comes about, that's... you know, I can't make those, decide all those things. I don't know, and that's a God thing. But I think people will be healed. And that moment where they pass into eternity, that's healing.
Yeah, and that feels like a cop-out sometimes when you're faced with, like, a young person or anybody, actually. Like, if it was my mom, for example, like, I'd still be like, that's so unfair. Like, it just feels so unfair. But then I just think there's so many horrible things that happen in the world that are unfair, and I just think none of them are from God. We need to remember that God is good, like, God, like, loves us, and, like, I've seen, like, I don't know, people, like, young people in their last moments, like, I had one girl who was, like, in her last, she was, the doctor said she didn't have long left, and she was, like, at one point crying, like, tears of joy, and just kept repeating, like, I don't deserve this, I don't deserve this. And she said that she just felt, like, God's love. And, like, you just, like, God's doing so much in those moments that I think we're never going to know on a human level, and we're never going to understand it. And I don't know. It is hard to watch, though, like, really hard.
Yeah, yeah. Thank God that there are people like you that are around those young people and those teenagers. No, seriously, Sarah, that are around those teenagers that can be just a little bit of positive, a little bit of light, a little bit of hope, a little bit of just a sparkle in their day. Especially when you said that there's some of them and their parents, they don't really have family.
Yeah.
And that's tough.
And I feel like sometimes they're the hardest ones, because you take on a lot more responsibility in a way, like, you know, I've had it when I've had young girls and it's their 21st birthday, nobody's come to see them, and, you know, they're spending it with me, Like, and I'm like, you've known me like 2 years or or they're dying in ITU and nobody's coming to them. I'm the only one going. It's just like, it's so sad. But, you know, I do believe that God is there.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people deal with things, their circumstances really aren't matching up with what they would really love and what they've been praying for and what they've been believing for. But they're just right in the middle of, now it may not be death, might be something else. It might be something as simple as just waiting for that visa to come through so they can live with their family or something like that. Many things that how would you think that they would, what's the best thing that they can do? What do you think?
Best thing they can do? I mean, that's a hard question because I guess everybody's circumstances are different, but my only advice would be take time and spend time with God because he's the only one with the answers, like, and he will speak to you through different ways. But yeah, just take time out. Because I think often when you're faced with difficulties, it's so easy to push God away or to feel a bit angry or a bit like, I don't know, miffed off at God. So I'm busy today, like, I'm just going to skip the Bible. I'm not in the mood or I don't feel like it. But really, when we don't feel like it, that's the time when we need it most. So take time out, spend time with God, and not just tick it off on a box list. Like, I've read my Bible, I've said a prayer, that's me done. Like, take time and like listen and ask God for answers because he is the only one with the answers.
Yeah. It's true. Sometimes I think for me personally, I would say we can't fathom everything, can we?
No.
we try and work out, why is that not happening? Why did that person get that miracle?
Yeah.
And why is it not happening for me?
Yeah.
And we can just never work that out. We will never, because we'll never have the mind of God. We'll, as in God's God.
Yeah.
I'm human.
Yeah.
But I do have the Word of God that I can read. I do have the family of God, the church God that I can be a part of and that I can be connected with and remain connected with. That builds faith.
Yeah.
And you know that faith pleases God.
Yeah.
And it's just simple things like that. You know, I can do days where I haven't read my Bible, I haven't really prayed, and then I'll kind of go, oh, my gosh, I need to get back in there. What am I doing?
Yeah.
And then I'll just, for the next few days, I'm very focused on it and I can't understand it. I can't explain it really well. But somehow or other, those next few days just go really smoothly.
Yeah.
Go really easily. Or that thing that I was trying to work out just all falls into place. And I just kind of smile at myself and I go, God, it really does work.
Yeah.
Spending time with you, reading your word, knowing your word, confessing your word, praying, talking to you does work.
Yeah, it does.
We can't always work out how the answer's going to look.
Yeah.
But it does work.
Yeah.
And even within us, just within our own soul, that we're encouraged because we'd spend time with God and we've read the word, that we encourage ourselves. The Bible does say to do that, to encourage ourselves by reading the word of God. So that's the things we've got to do. And we've got to hold on to that and just keep doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And answers will come.
Yeah, they will.
Mm. So on a lighter note.
Yeah.
Let's just change.
Lighten up a little.
Change tack a little. I had heard, now someone had told me this, my maybe beautiful Steph over here might have been a little helpful here for me, but she said to me that apparently you were asked to come to Calla quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it was just not once but several times.
Yeah.
And those people that are inviting you were quite strong. They weren't just kind of like, oh, come to Calla, oh, bad luck, no, you're not coming.
Yeah.
They were quite insistent on you coming.
Yeah, they bought me tickets.
And you kind of were like, no.
Yeah.
No. What, you didn't like the girly thing? What was it you didn't want about Calla? I can't get my head around that.
I mean, I don't want to offend you. Like, I have to be careful with what I say. Well, my friend who I lived with at the time, she was a Christian, and I had just, you know, this is at the beginning when I was just kind of like occasionally come to church. She was all excited because she bought me a colour ticket. And I was like, what is this colour thing? Why, if you go to Hillsong, like, because I think I'd had it from everybody. Like, you have to come to colour. You have to come to colour. Colour's amazing, blah, blah. And I was like, sounds like my worst nightmare. I'm a bit of a tomboy and always have been. And I was just like, it's just going to be loads of middle-aged women talking about their insecurities. And you know, it'll be really cheesy and girly and, like, my worst nightmare. So I was like, definitely not. And so she bought me a ticket, bless her, and I threw it back in her face. Oh. I told her, I told you, I didn't want to go. Why is everyone trying to force me to go to this stupid girly conference? Anyway, so I had that the first year, bless her. And then the second year, I remember I was actually walking back from work. I remember it so well. And I'd had, like, the worst day, like, just sitting with somebody that was in a really bad way. And I was like, God, I really want to know if you're real. Like, please, will you speak to me? I need to hear you, like, your voice. I got home, there was a colour ticket on my pillow. But instead of being like, oh, maybe this is, like, from God, I got so angry. And I was like, for goodness sake, what is it with this colour thing? So I walked into my housemate's room, and I think I swore at her. And I was like, what the F is this? I was like, I've told you, I don't want to go to this stupid women's conference. Like, what is it with you Hillsong women? And anyway, and she was like, I promise, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, it wasn't me. And anyway, so I still don't know who it was to this day who sent me. It was anonymous. And I remember getting into bed that night, and it's like a little light switch went off, and I was like, maybe God would speak to me at colour. And I actually lived not far. It was when it was at the Royal Albert Hall, and I lived not far from there. So in my head, I was like, well, I've got a free ticket. Like, I'll take the days off, and I'll just to pick a mixed colour and just go to whatever I feel like and see if it's for me. And I can always walk out like it's not the end of the world. Anyway, I was at every single session, because the first session I went to was Priscilla Shirer, who actually kicks ass. And yes, she was amazing. And I was like, this is not. And then you did the whole, like, you do it every year, but what is it like when, like, what can we do in our world? Like, how can we make a difference? Like, it's so actually about
500,
like,
projects.
And, yeah. And I was like, this is not about, like, us at all. Like, do you know what I mean? Mm. And there was cheesy bits, but there was also, like, other bits as well. And I really enjoyed it. And, like, so I've been every year since. But yeah, so.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, maybe even the cheesy bits are intentional.
Yes.
Cheesy bits, do you think?
But, you know what? I actually quite like the cheesy bits. I mean, I remember, what was it, the one Dawn Cherie came, and she was like, she's like the cheesiest girl ever, and she was doing, like, the tick, tick, boom thing. Oh my gosh, I got so into it, and I was like absolutely loving every minute. And my friend next to me was like, who even are you anymore? And I was like, I don't know, but I love it.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to stop laughing.
So yeah.
Okay.
There's something for every woman, even if you are a tomboy.
I know. You know, and if that is, honestly, that's probably the thing that irritates me the most when I'm talking to people about colour or inviting people if they haven't been before. Oh, no, it's a girly thing. I'm not. That really annoys me.
Does
because
it?
It's not a girly thing.
Yeah, no, it's not. No. I mean, there is girl. It is
girly,
girly, but it's
it.
Good. Like,
yes.
It's,
yes.
You know, it's
Thank
not
you.
All like how I'd pictured in my head it to be.
Yeah. All full of middle-aged women. Sitting there.
I just imagined it was all like, woe is me, like my insecurities, and I don't know. I'll stop talking now.
I love that.
Cut that bit.
All right. So, Sarah, thank you so much for coming.
Thank
you've
you
made
for
us
having
laugh.
Me.
You've kind of made us cry. You've made us think an awful lot. And I just appreciate that. I appreciate that there are such incredibly valuable people like yourself in church.
Thank you.
Because that's what we so often do. You know, on the Sunday, we all come together, we all worship, and we hear the word of God and spend time together, and then we go out into our world.
Yeah.
And we take that with us.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you do. You take that with you. You take the presence of God, love of God with you. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Stop talking, Sarah, for goodness sake.
She was good. Hey. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for listening. I love having a good, honest talk with great people. I hope you enjoyed listening too. If you want to learn more about anything that we've talked about, email us at conversations@hillsong.co.uk and join in the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Use the hashtag
Convos with Cathy. Till next time, see ya.